There we go. Let's get weird, dude. College football, week six. I mean, just when we pick a week and you go, man, there's only one ranked on ranked matchup. There's not going to be a lot of great games to look at. What the freak just happened? That was outstanding. Where do we start? We could start. I mean, there's so many places to talk about. We got to start with Bama, right? Like, we got to go Bama.
Hey, right here.
Legends never die, baby. Diego Pavia.
I mean, unbelievable. Like, and here's the thing. That hasn't happened, obviously, since 1984, since Bama lost to Vandy. But golly, here's what I loved about it the most, Brent. I loved the most about this was Vanderbilt shot their shots. Like, they did not sit back. They did not.
No.
So many teams, when they get in the moment and they have a chance to do what Vanderbilt had a chance to do, they start to do this and they go, let the clock tick down. Don't make a mistake.
Let me punt.
Make them earn it. By the way, Bama never led in this ball game. Not one time. Like, Vanderbilt stayed aggressive. Fourth and two with 2 minutes left in the third. What do they do? They throw a daggum pass on their own 30 when they could have kicked a field goal. By the way, we'll get to it in a little bit. Iowa, what the freak were you doing? Like, why were you not being aggressive going to try to win it? But they stayed aggressive, man. Pavia has magic, and that was really, really fun to watch. The offense of Vanderbilt stayed aggressive. They passed the football. Like, nobody saw that coming. Bama scored what? They scored 40 points almost, and it still, you know, wasn't enough. That was absolute. That was nuts, bro.
Well, and it's the recipe also. They kept the ball. I mean, what was it?
42 minutes time of possession.
Time of possession, 12 of 18 on third down. And if the recipe for beating a team that's way more talented than you, especially if you're on your own offense, is either one sort of trick play, hit big shots, hit trick plays, things like that, but misdirection. Vanderbilt's offense is fun to watch. The variations, the QB run game, all of it, misdirection.
It's triple option. If you watch Vanderbilt's, you watch their offense, it's old school triple option from the shotgun. You know, they brought the gun. And here's what I like about Clark Lee. Clark Lee, who obviously came from Notre Dame, he was storied. He was obviously a great mind already as it was. I love what he said, Brent. He said coming into this season, I had to do things differently. And I finally got Vanderbilt to a point where I like it. But he said, I learned, by the way, we learned this in youth league football, I have to get the best 11 people on the field. Like, I can't afford to go, he's a lineman, he's X. Like, I've got to get the best players on the field. And they did that. But yes, multiple variations of run. The shovel pass game was on point, made big plays left and right, going forward on fourth down, third and one in the red area. Don't just run the football. Don't be bland. They let Pavia do his thing. He gets outside the pocket, slings the ball sidearm. By the way, how many times did you see him go like this, different angles? But they stayed aggressive. You're right. 42 minutes time of possession. They won the turnover battle 2-0. So that's exactly what you got to do. They scored on defense.
Scored on one of those turnovers.
Yeah, and again, was it a fortunate break? Absolutely, it was a fortunate break. But I think you also saw a little bit of a hangover, which happens in college football. And, you know, coming into this game, you don't take Vanderbilt. By the way, Nick Saban, you know, foot insert mouth with his comment, and obviously that's going to be replayed at Vanderbilt's. By the way, he's not wrong. Like, Vanderbilt does not have the crowd of everywhere else. But when you go on the road, by the way, let's talk about the other teams that got upset. Because guess what they all had in common, homie? They were all on the road. Like, number four, Tennessee, goes to Arkansas. Arkansas, we said on the show this week, on the preview show, they very easily could be 5-0. They should be 5-0. But they're not. And so you don't respect them as much. And I thought Green played out of his mind. I thought he was incredible. Bobby Petrino got brought in to Arkansas to call offense this year for Sam Pittman, and he has proven he is a great mind. Jackson at running back, their best two players running the football. They had
two
so
at receiver.
Many. Do what?
Two at receiver, Andrew Armstrong.
Yeah,
that dude balled his.
But man,
tail off.
Arkansas, and how about Arkansas? Like, just they were aggressive. They were throwing the football. Green was scrambling outside the pocket. What'd you think of the Tennessee Arkansas game?
I mean, it was a completely almost one-sided game. They just couldn't score.
They missed
opportunities. But the also thing is the defensive plan and the defensive effort from Travis Williams' defense, because it looked very much like watching it. It looked like a Georgia versus Tennessee game plan. And by the way, they have two former Georgia defenders on their defense, but still, it's one where the give shine up yards. Now. Yep,
blitz drop, a certain drop instances, a bunch of guys in the coverage.
She was like the shine is a little bit off of what Tennessee's offense, what they thought it could be with Nico. But I've always been sort of critical of Heupel's offense in certain situations. It's somewhat predictable in a way. But
okay, well, let's talk about Nico because here's the thing about Nico. We gave him a lot of pub, rightfully so. But one thing about Nico, and when I watch this Tennessee offense, when his eyes come down, you watch when he gets a little bit of pressure and his eyes come down, you see a lot of quarterbacks as they develop, as they mature, they start to slide and then they make throws. When Nico's eyes come down, he takes off. He wants to run the football. Listen, he's a really good athlete, but I think he's got to learn to continue to do damage from the pocket. I thought Heupel played it conservative, extremely conservative down the stretch. He wasn't trying to put the ball in Nico's hands until the three-minute mark. And then when there was 3:45 left, I think is when Arkansas ended up getting the ball. But, like, they had three timeouts because Tennessee threw the ball twice. And we've seen them play conservative, and they were playing conservative in the fourth quarter. And then they flipped the switch, and they said, all right, Nico, I want you to go win it. And here's the thing. He didn't. And we got to call a spade a spade. And I think he looked a little bit frazzled. Now, the snap wasn't his fault when it went to the running back, but he runs out of bounds the last play of the game when that ball's got to be thrown in the end zone. And so I think Nico, listen, he's a freshman. He's still learning. He's still growing. The Tennessee defense showed up, by the way. They still showed up and did their job. The Tennessee offense, man, they just didn't do what we thought they could do. They didn't make plays, and they didn't win this football game in the end when they had a chance.
Did you like seeing the zero, the young kid toting the rock, big fella at the end?
Dude, big boy. Yeah, Braylon Russell. Like, how about that for Arkansas? By the way, Arkansas fans, like, woo pig suey. Woo freaking pig suey. Like, you should be jacked up because you should have freaking beat Oklahoma State. You could be undefeated, but you should be happy with the product you have. You had a backup kicker today. Your starting quarterback who was balling gets hurt. Your best running back gets hurt. A freshman comes in the game at both spots, at quarterback, at running back, and you find a way to win the football game? Like, Arkansas fans, you should be jacked out of your mind what you just did. Like, that was an unbelievable performance. Your defense played great. You mixed it up. You hadn't pressured the quarterback all season long. You were getting hits on Nico. You were tackling the football. You were stopping the run game. Like, Arkansas fans should be jacked up, should be excited. That was a team effort, and they came up with a big play in a big moment. And it was interesting, you know, the clock decision late for Tennessee to let him run him in. I think it's the right decision because it gives you time to try to win the football game. But, Brent, we ain't done. Like, there was more. Like, where do you want to go next?
Well, I mean, and there's still more happening as we're talking, by the way, because Cal is up on Miami. But what's interesting, the start of the day kind of slow, though, because Texas A&M absolutely dominated
Missouri. Frying pan to the lid. Like, hey, by the way, I bragged about Connor Wigman to start the season. This is why I bragged about Connor Wigman. Like, the dude is good, man. He's got some really big gifts. When you watch A&M, and listen, they've been great the last several weeks. They've been finding ways to win, beat Arkansas in a tough game. But Connor Wigman and his poise, Connor Wigman and his somewhat athletic ability, he's not obviously as athletic as the other guy. Marcel's done a great job, and he's more athletic, but he's more polished, and he's going through routes, and he's going through progressions. He scrambled when he needed to. And A&M said, hey, boys, I'm undefeated in the SEC, because they are. They're undefeated in the SEC. You first look place. At their schedule. There's a chance, very good chance, A&M with that defense, with the secondary getting better. Like, this is the team with them, Le'Veon Moss running the football, them getting it all going. Noah out wide, number three, balling at 6'6". Like, A&M fans should also be extremely jacked up. They played at home. And Missouri fans, I'm going to feel the other way, Brent. Like, I 2-0 to start, slugfest through two. Maybe you feel better because Vanderbilt beat Bama. But what do you think about Missouri fans?
I mean, it's just – what was funny is we talked about the deep ball, lack of deep ball success. And then the first play of the game, he hits a, like, 30-yarder to Burden. And then after that, it was just mistake after mistake after mistake. And they borderline gave up.
By the way, just got that is a dominated. Trend, though.
Physically and dominant.
We've talked about that, Brent. That has been a trend for Missouri. Like, they have been penalty-ridden. They had been explosive play lacking. Like, those are things that we've seen, but the 2-0 to start was easy, and then Boston College and Vandy, and then they struggle, and then Missouri's got – they still got a favorable schedule down the stretch. But, yeah, Brady Cook, I love Brady Cook and what's in here. I love what's in his chest. I love his athletic ability. If you watch Brady Cook, when he gets pressured, Brady Cook really struggles because when he gets pressured, he wants to run, but he doesn't understand how to attack where the pressure comes from. And you could tell Luther Burden was upset. You could tell he got – and listen, Missouri fans, I know it. You don't even have to tell me. I know you're going to say should have been P.I. on the first possession.
Yes.
Would have been different. Yep. Should have been. Absolutely should have been. Luther Burden goes 70, and you got a legal man downfield. So – it was some self-imposed wounds, but Corey Schrader ran the football last year and provided extreme balance. Last couple games, not as much balance, specifically today. And A&M's front man, we talked about Nick coming into this game, big number 11, thicker than a Snickers, coming off the edge, looking good, rushing the passer. A&M's got some dudes looking better in the secondary. A&M, they'll have a chance to still be very much in this mix. Connor Wigman growing up, getting back in the offense, getting healthy, because he's got something inside there, man, that I love, his poise and his toughness. And so, obviously, that was a huge Wigman, game earlier. And
he was way more calm today.
Like, yeah.
You just see it. And maybe a lot of times you step away for a little bit. You see this sort of different viewpoint. Nick Scorton, by the way, he gave me some DP-47 drip vibes. Like with the long white shirt underneath, and just, you know, you weren't really king of drip back in the day, and he kind of reminded me of that.
Absolutely not. I was not concerned with drip, but I think he makes it look a little bit better than I did. But that gum, bro, he comes and he plays hard. By the way, let's do this first before. But I got more to get to. There's so much to get to. How about Washington and Michigan? Like, you want to go there next? Because
rough night, I guess, for the Big Ten. Because
I mean, listen, the SEC beat itself up too. But like, here's what I saw with Washington. First of all, understand Michigan's beat to crap. Like, they are, okay. Center was out, left tackle was out, but and they get down 14-0, and I think Michigan's in trouble. And then they go to Tooting, bro, and things changed. Like, that offense goes 17 unanswered. But here's the thing with Michigan, man. When Michigan has played like this, when they don't have the ability to score and they don't have the ability to create explosive plays and it has to be so dink and dunk, here's the problem. When you fumble the football like they did, Washington scores. When you throw an interception like they did, like, they just can't overcome those things. Michigan still plays great defense. Now, their defense let them down late in that ball game with a PI that they could have got back on the football field probably, but from their best player, Will Johnson. But I think – Michigan's margin for error. We've been saying they're a quarterback away from being really, really good. I'll say this. I do think they found the guy. Like, do you agree with that? Like, watching him watching him lead this offense, I'm not saying it was perfect, but I think Michigan has a guy that can at least make them get out of the Army-Navy conversation of, like, being so one-dimensional they can complete passes down the field.
Yeah, he was 10 of 18, 98 yards, did throw a pick, had a couple turnovers, but at least it gives you some level of competence there, and you an option versus
98 yards is 2 days worth of passing so far the last, like, 5 weeks for Michigan. So, but give Washington credit, because here's what I love about Washington is they met the physical challenge of Michigan, because, yes, they were banged up on the offensive line, but Michigan's defense physically will wear you out. They will hit you in the mouth repeatedly. It makes it hard to protect their quarterback. Ask USC. Like, and they more than held their own, made plays late in the football game. The Huskies making a big win in the Big Ten, making a statement, so that was another big one. And then, by the way, row the boat, Skyy Ma, like Minnesota.
Darius Taylor.
Dude, PJ Fleck, yes. When you watch Minna frickin' Soda, I love the way they play year after year. It comes from their head coach. The dude's got juice. He's got life. He's so cool, man. If you ever spent time with him, Brent, you'd be like, okay, I love that guy. Like, I just love what's in here, and I love how he carries himself. And I thought it took some serious onions down the stretch. Like, that dude on third and goal from the 1-inch yard line, he runs the football with a QB sneak. And then guess what? Clock ticks off. They take a timeout. And instead of kicking a field goal to go up three, they freaking do it again. And called it short initially, but Minnesota believes in their guys. But yeah, you're right. Mention that dude, because that's all I saw watching that game was he was the whole offense, and he looked like one of the better backs in the country.
30 touches, 201 yards when you count the receiving yards. Big time plays from Taylor. Very much
Darius so. Taylor, bad man.
It's the interesting thing about the conference piece. Now, Michigan and Washington obviously played in the national championship game, but those are obviously two completely different teams. But normally you see these tight games like this, but there's a learning curve because you're not used to playing these teams, and maybe that's leading to some of these games and some of these upsets because you're not quite used to, hey, this guy calls this way. I can do these things against this defensive coach, things like that. But big picture, that was those two teams losing big for the Big Ten. It takes some of the luster off of the Penn State USC matchup this next week. I actually think the struggle's there, because if USC's going to struggle in that way, they're going to struggle to win other games too. But it leaves the door open for the ACC.
But I will say this, if I'm a USC fan and I'm watching the Trojans right now, I'm going, coach, like, if you could have hired me this coordinator 2 years ago, I'd probably have a natty. Like, I'd have been very much in the mix, because USC's defense is competent now. Like, they're physical.
They're playing well.
Like, they're coached well. They're in the right spots. Now, listen, they gave out tonight, and they didn't do what they needed to do to get off the field. But the offense also is not in rhythm. They turned the football over up seven with a chance to go get a field goal and maybe really make Minnesota one-dimensional, you know, from a passing standpoint instead of a rushing, and that game's different. But, golly, you think about the opposite worlds of what we had, you know, in the past several years with Lincoln Riley, and now they're running the football the whole second half. They're playing pretty good defense, and it's just weird. It's like in a twilight zone, man. I feel like it just doesn't seem to be real. It seems to be fake. But all right, game.
And I would say the reason I mentioned the opening up for the ACC is because SMU now with
give it to me.
And with Kevin Jennings at QB with 280 throwing, 113 running, and then their schedule.
Hey, do you have their schedule? Pull their schedule up, because I wanted to talk about this. First of all, you said the name. Kevin Jennings, number 7. They started the season with Preston Stone and Kevin Jennings going back and forth. And listen, nothing against Preston Stone. He's a good player. And he came in, by the way, for one snap, Brent, and threw a 10-yard fade for a touchdown, which was fantastic. But when you watch SMU, like, and you look at their schedule, and you look at Kevin Jones, and you look at their running back crew, by the way, they got a bunch of them. They just rotate it. You start watching 13-1, and like, then they bring in LJ near the goal line. Like, they've got some flipping dudes. Like, they know how to run the football. Their offensive line is physical. They got playmakers out wide, and Kevin Jennings does it on the run. He does it with poise. Like, I feel like I watched him. I kept writing down clips of, dude, how did he do that? Like, they run a flea flicker later in the game. I think it was in the third quarter with 9:14 left, and it's a tie ball game. You run a flea flicker to make a big play. So young quarterbacks and guys that are inexperienced, you think, okay, you give him a flea flicker, he's going to chuck that puppy. Not only did he not chuck it, squared up, scrambled around, hit the check down, got 20 yards. Like, he makes them really unique, and Rhett Lashley can do all of his stuff with him at the quarterback spot, and he's played well the past couple of games. And you watch 7 for SMU, and give me that schedule, Brent, because it's pretty favorable the rest of the way.
It looks pretty good. It's at Stanford, 2 weeks, by the way, not next week, but 2 weeks, at Duke, home against Pitt, home against Boston College, at Virginia, home against Cal.
So probably favored in every game the rest of the way.
Yeah, they're likely favored in every game the rest of the way.
And remember, they're not a non-Power 4 team. They are in the ACC. So it's kind of weird.
And their loss was to BYU. So yeah, they are
which is in the Big 12. Which is in the Big 12. So bear with us because we're all learning together on all the conference realignment stuff. And a lot of those teams he was playing, by the way, or he was talking about, they are also ACC teams when you talk about Stanford and Cal. Those are teams that are in the ACC as well.
Yeah, and that's I think that's kind of watching over the first now, you know, 6 weeks of the season, the biggest picture point with what the portal has done is with the right QB plus the right schedule, your ability to make the playoff is just exponentially, the schedule part just matters exponentially more now because of the depth of the conferences and who do you avoid versus who do you play within your conference schedule.
Well, and that's the reason why we also have more parity in college football, because you're seeing all these guys that would have sat on big time rosters and played it when their second or third year. Now they're like, bump that. I'm going to go get paid somewhere else. So I think it's also, you know, you got so many teams that are still in it, which makes it really, really cool. And it will make down the stretch cooler. By the way, Ohio State, first little test. And here's what I'll say about Ohio State. I think Ohio State has a really elite defense. I think they're going to be really, really good. Up front, they're good. They stopped Caleb, who is an animal, Caleb Johnson for Iowa, who I think is one of the best backs in all of the country. They stopped Iowa. Iowa, give me a second, Brent. Iowa, what the freak are we doing? Like, what are we doing? We've got a great ball game. I think it's 7-0, and it's 4th and 3 from the 30, and we go for a field goal. Like, please go watch Bama. Please go watch Arkansas. Like, when you get the, or excuse me, please go watch Vandy. Go watch Arkansas.
Yes.
When you're in these moments and you are outmanned and you are out-athleted across the board, you are going to have to take chances, a la 4th and 1 from the 50-yard line. Another opportunity in the first half to make this a game, to go out and get touchdowns, not field goals, and to not punt a 22-yard punt after that. Like, Iowa has to play to win. We play to win the game. Like, they've got to be more aggressive in those situations, man. I don't understand what they were playing for offensively. I think you put the over under at 20. Would they get to 20? Not even close.
Nope.
But I'm gonna let you go first. But I got some thoughts on Ohio State's offense after watching them against a pretty good defense that I think is interesting.
Well, I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago. They're still too east-westy to me. And it's can you win in the passing game when you absolutely have to for consistency?
Are you talking about Ohio State or Iowa?
Ohio State.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it applies to Iowa too, if you want to apply that for short passing, long passing, any kind of passing.
Passing in general, forward passing. But I will say the game next week, obviously, and we're going to look at that and possibly even do some film breakdown on that, but it's going to be a massively physical game because Oregon looks very physical and played their best game on both lines of scrimmage against Michigan State.
Yeah, and Dylan Gabriel can negate some – now, listen, the offensive line for Oregon, they rush the football better than they have Oregon, which is a great sign. Dylan Gabriel – when he catches that thing, bro, he's ripping it. Like, he's played for 25 years. He's been in college football a long time with so much experience. He knows what he's seeing, how to get rid of the football. They're very creative with their scheme. So that can give, you know, Ohio State some problems where I think they have some advantages in the trenches. And I thought Iowa had some spots on the outside where you could tell there were plays to be made. Okay, but I want to flip to the other side. Ohio State's offense. I think Ohio State's offense looks a lot more like Georgia's than most. And I say that, I don't think Ohio State's offense, even though they have enormous, big-time, better playmakers than Georgia, way better playmakers, Abuka and Jeremiah Smith, Freaky Friday. Like, if you're not watching that freshman, he is the best freshman in the country. Like, that dude is insane. And I know we got a pretty good one, Ryan Williams, number two for Bama, but Smith is just one-hand catching every week and making big plays. So when I watch this offense, though, it's not going to be overly explosive. You know, it's going to be quarterback run game, especially on short yard situations. But I don't think Howard, you know, sees the whole field where he's going to go through progression one, progression two, progression three. But they got multiple backs they can hand it to. They have a third running back at the running back spot in Will Howard. Like, he's a running back. He's a 245-pound mule that can lower his shoulder and make plays. And then they have Jeremiah Smith and Mbuku on the outside that can beat man-to-man coverage. So they're going to be a problem. You just wonder how explosive they are in the passing game. And if somebody can match up physically in the trenches and get them in predictable passing situations, now you still got to cover those dudes out wide. And that's a problem. But their offense isn't what we've seen. When I think of Ohio State offenses, you know, the past, we can go back a number of years, at least 4, 5, 6 years at the quarterback spot where you're thinking you're making big plays on the outside. You can throw the ball 30, 40 times. I don't think that's Ohio State's recipe. I don't think they're going to want to do that. And I think they're built to run the football more than pass the football.
More Craig Krenzel, Ohio State, than C.J. Stroud, Ohio State. Very much so. But when you talk about the physical part, with different levels of playmakers, I think.
Yes.
That sets up for that game next week, because Oregon's D-line is pretty dirty. Harmon that we mentioned, Jordan Burch, DJU's brother, Mateo Uyunglele, however you say it, but I haven't said that in a while, so.
Uyunglele.
Yeah, there you go. Good job.
No, I think you're right.
It'll be a fun game next week, that's for sure.
Hey, by the way, it's in Eugene, which for the people that live in the South, it's one of the most southeastern like type atmospheres that there is. Like the fans are nuts, the fans are crazy. Great receivers out wide for both squads. Like Tez Johnson and Evan Stewart are pretty dang good too. So it's going to be awesome, and we'll get to that preview elsewise. What'd you think of Georgia, big homie? I believe, if you don't know this, Brent writes for Rivals. Brent writes for, or he does PFF. So, but I think your score prediction was pretty close to spot on for the Auburn game.
I had 30-13, so it was 31-13. But I think the biggest thing with Georgia is this is who they are. They're a let's be balanced. And Kirby even said it before the game, the interview, the little sideline interview right before, he said, I want to play complimentary football. So to him, that's running game, clock, time of possession, balance with the defense, all the things that go with that. They're not a drop back team. They don't have the playmakers to be that kind of team. And it's got to be balanced. Take play action shots when you can, play good defense. And by the way, we got to see more of Nate Frazier this week. I think he needs to keep seeing more of him because he's just different. His energy is different for that game. But both them and Ole Miss answered the call this week after a loss the previous week.
So let's start with Georgia. Things I need to do. Let's start with Georgia, and then we'll get to Hotty Toddy. When you look at Georgia, I don't think that's a bad thing that they want to be balanced. When you saw Auburn play coverage today, extremely loose, didn't want to give up the big play. And Carson, by the way, pull up Brent, his numbers real quick, because, you know, you watch Carson Beck and you have such high expectations for him because you've seen him play so well. And you like, man, he hasn't really played great. You know, he missed that one ball over the middle that it was short. He could have made that. You know, Aaron Smith, every game is going to, you know, get a contested, you know, deep ball that's going to be tough to catch, and he might drop it, he might catch it. And then you look up and you're like, that son of a gun just went like 18 for 23. And
23 of 29 in this game.
Yeah, and so, like, Carson Beck does so much, and while it doesn't always whet your appetite, the dude's super efficient. He's going to check the football down. He's not going to turn it over. And so that's why you see so many great things happen. But you talk about Nate Frazier. He's a freak elite. He's a freshman. Trevor Etienne, you can look on the screen. He's elite. Like, I love watching Trevor Etienne. Like, if you could give him a few more holes. Listen, like, let's also point out Georgia's offensive line and what they're dealing with. Their best two offensive linemen are out right now. So you just played a pretty good defense and a pretty good football team without your best two offensive linemen. I mean, and you were okay. and you played complimentary football and you weren't overly explosive, but you know, Auburn is a decent football team, and the defense, I think, is continuing to be good. I wonder if there'll be guys that come along too that are young pups that play more, you know, maybe in the secondary, but Georgia is a really, really good football team. And in a day where you watch Tennessee lose, and in a day where you watch Bama lose, you don't see a lot of Georgia that's going to beat themselves and allow other teams to dictate to them or lose to teams. Even when they play Kentucky close, like, it was a really good football game. Georgia finds a way to win. They find a way to win those football games, and they're very consistent with that. And I think they'll consist. I think they'll continue to grow. But man, I got to get to Hottie Toddy. Like, Hottie Toddy, gosh almighty, Ole Miss, right? Like, what'd you think of the Rebels, Omi G?
They showed something, and defensively, like, handled it, and turnovers early. Sellers coming back didn't play sort of all that well, but that's a response that you needed to see from that team, because if after losing the game at home like that, if they go and just fumble around and mess around in that game, turn the ball over, that's really not good. And that's a response to me that you needed to see from them, very much so.
Yeah. Jackson Dart made plays, you know, down the field, which was good to see. South Carolina, man, like, I'm with you, dog. I like cheering for South Carolina. I love the atmosphere. I love Shane Beamer's energy. I hated the fake punt. First possession in their own territory, and you hate it when it doesn't work. But, and then South Carolina fumbles. So South Carolina goes fake punt, stuffed. South Carolina fumbles the next possession. Next thing you know, you're down 14, and this is not an offense that's built to throw from behind. And so I think it immediately got them out of rhythm, got them out of who they are. And then Jackson Dart, you know, kept hitting Trey Harris. Now that will be the interesting development for him. Me, Trey Harris is in the top five conversation for receivers and all across college football. And coming into the game, he was the only one in the country that had at least 70% of the targets from his quarterback. He went down and it looked like it was pretty serious. So I don't know if it was an ankle, and it might come out later what it was, but Hottie Toddy can beat you multiple ways. I like the way they ran the football today, and were a little bit more patient, especially once they got up and once they knew that South Carolina couldn't hurt them. But yeah, the defensive side of the football for Ole Miss, like, they're going to keep them in games. Just like last week when the offense really, really struggled against Kentucky, they were still in the football game because they're so much better on the defensive line. They're so much better in quarterback and in the back end that they can stay in all these football games. So you're right. I love the response from Ole Miss, and that's what good teams do, man. You're going to have bad weeks, but I'm really interested in how you respond, because we're seeing this across college football. Like, now Bama, the brands that are Bama, the brands that are Michigan, the brands that are Tennessee, you know, those teams, the brands that are USC, all those teams are looking to bounce back this week. Like, college, Brent, I think we're in for more wackiness too. Like, I don't think we're done.
Do. I
think we're going to have plenty more upsets in college football. I think there's less dominant teams. I don't know that there's anybody that's just.
That's what the portal's done. I think that's that more than anything is what the portal has done is yep. taken from the sort of the G5 ranks where you don't see dominant teams in that. You're not going to see a Cincinnati at that point, I don't think, anymore. And the any given Saturday component of college football is just added, because all of these Power Four teams that are taking these guys, they're just more competent. They're more able, at least on a given day, to match up well with you, play well with you. And like, next week, you might have a team like my West Virginia Mountaineers who get to play undefeated Iowa State at home that might have a little something to say about the Big 12 race. And it's going to be a week-to-week thing with everything. Now, by the way, one that I figured you'd want to talk about him again, but your boy from Boise State, Ashton GT.
I don't think people understand. Like, this is the best running back in college football. It's not close, but I think what this dude's doing is flirting with being the best running back of all time. Like, the best season. Let's put it this way. Austin Genty is flirting with having the best season of all time. Like,
Ashton. Ashton. We got to get it right, because he's that good.
Okay. Ashton Genty is literally flirting with having one of the best seasons of all time. The dude, his touchdown runs are highlight material. It's like, how do you break so many tackles and less than 100 carries to get to 1,000 yards? Like, did you hear me? Like, yeah. Less than 100 carries to get to 1,000 yards. I mean, he is, and he's on an offense that I don't consider it elite. It's elite because of him. And he's just he is literally playing the NCAA video game. And you're doing the building dynasty mode. And you're like, I'm just going to do it with this guy. And he's going to be the guy that I'm going to feature, give all the touches to, so I can level him up and go win a national championship. Like, that's what he's doing at Boise State. This season is all-time special. Like, this is a chance to be all-time special, all-time great. So Boise State still winning big, very much in the mix to continue to move up the polls, to continue to be that team that can join the playoffs. Let's see.
I thought you were going to get old school Tecmo Bowl, by the way, Bo Jackson. Tecmo Bowl,
just zigzag is really good. By the way, today, you know who's a big winner today? That Notre Dame.
I got four.
Oh, okay. Give me
Notre Dame. Notre Dame, LSU, BYU, and Texas. They didn't play.
Yeah. And Notre Dame, though, with the A&M win at Kyle Field, I think by the end of the season, that's going to continue to look better and better. And they need that. Like, because USC lost today, homie. Like, that's another Notre Dame needed another thing. Again, they don't play a conference championship game at the end of the season. So Notre Dame needs another.
You have Army and Navy.
Correct. They need another feather in the cap. And Army and Navy could definitely give them trouble. But Notre Dame had a good off one. Who else won, brother?
In terms of, like, one we talked about early, previewing the games, my Hoosiers that I am sort of on the bandwagon for.
Told you, brother.
Rourke, again, 380, three TDs. Sets up a big time matchup against Nebraska next week.
By the way,
I still actually think they're going to possibly be undefeated hosting Michigan. And I mean, who knows?
By the way, tip of the cap to Nebraska. Horrible field conditions, like 30 mile an hour winds, but their defense played really, really good. And listen, Rutgers fans, I'm from New Jersey. I was born in New Jersey. I'm a Southerner, by God. Like, I'm not going to claim New Jersey, but I'm just saying, growing up, my daddy was like, hey, man, you're going to be a Scarlet Knight. I'm like, Daddy, what's a Scarlet Knight? Well, it's obviously Rutgers. Rutgers, man, did they shoot themselves in the foot. Like, they shot themselves they blew their foot off today, dude. They dropped a wide open touchdown pass. They missed field goals. Like, but here's the thing I liked about Nebraska. They found a way to win. In the past, Nebraska found ways to lose. Matt Rhule, when you change culture, it doesn't happen overnight, dude. It takes time. It takes belief. The defense now stepping up, having a big game. So, like, it's not just on the offense. It's not, you know, both when you start playing complimentary football and great special teams, it's just you become a more well-rounded team that it's harder to beat. And so, Indiana, yeah, Rourke at QB. We talked about them a little bit in the preview. They're really good. Again, scored over 40 again, Brent. Like, they put up points. They are so good. And it's because number 9, I think, at the quarterback spot is absolutely spinning that thing. All right. You got anything else? Are we going to wrap this puppy up?
The only thing for me was how much fun it's, you know, we talk about the playoffs and would it diminish the regular season? I think the answer to that is a definitive no. And also, how much fun I had watching Syracuse and UNLV on Friday night.
That
was a great football game. And I'm wondering about just evaluate, like, the Williams kid, the QB for UNLV. He's got skills. He can run, spin it.
He can run the mess out of it. Yeah, and you're like, dang, the other guy was good. So is he.
Like, that was a just fun college football game that, you know, in the grand scheme of things might not have mattered much, but I thoroughly enjoyed watching it and may have fallen asleep and then woke up and had to realized that Syracuse won the game, but I was into it and really dialed in. And then
you weren't. I was into it till I wasn't. What a
Syracuse or UNLV went up, but yeah.
Well. Yeah. What a weekend, man, of college football. And we'll be back. If you like our show, man, we're going to keep doing this. We're going to keep giving you football stuff with energy because we absolutely love it. How about them Huskies out in Washington? One of the best fans, one of the best home atmospheres there is too. If you haven't been there, it's crazy awesome. Anchor the freak down. Vanderbilt University beating Alabama, number one team in the country. Woo!
Goal post on Broadway.
Big Suey. getting a top four win with a freshman running back. They lost their quarterback. A freshman quarterback comes in. They find a way to make plays. That offense is doing their thing. And then Sky Yima row the freaking boat. Minnesota coming up big. What a weekend. Hit subscribe if you like us, guys, man, and continue to tune in. We'll continue to keep bringing you college football because it's the best, because it always delivers.